Hey everyone, welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Audrey.
And on this podcast, we share the messy, honest, unfiltered, and not so curated parts of our life.
Think of this podcast as a bunch of bloopers with some truth bombs sprinkled throughout.
That's right. We're going to be taking you behind the scenes of our daily routines, our social media feeds, and what you may or may not have seen on TV.
We're going to be talking relationships, family, faith, business, basically whatever we are learning about, fighting about, or laughing about lately.
We're going to be sharing our daily life, our struggles, successes, and our roses and thorns from each week.
And we don't want this podcast to just be about us, so we're also going to go behind the scenes with some of the people who inspire us the most.
We hope this podcast feels like you're joining us for a campfire.
Come hang out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Behind the Scenes podcast. Babe, welcome back to Oregon.
Yeah, we just got back from Maui. We were there for how many days?
2 weeks. The 2nd to the 17th.
Third to the 17th. Yeah, so if you guys have been following along on Insta stories.
Yeah, it was a really good, it was like post-book tour. We wanted to go to Maui and we wrapped up with a signing there, and we had a little leadership conference that we do that was hosted there.
Mastermind
group. And then we spent a week just hanging out, and it was really good.
I think we had to learn that
traveling with
someone commented on my post, traveling with toddlers is not vacations, it's just trips. Or if you're bringing your toddlers on vacation, it's not a vacation.
And like I said, it was good. Like post book tour, we got to spend a lot of interrupted time with Ember, and that was really nice. Uninterrupted time.
I think we learned a lot about Ember in this trip because we were just like with her all day, every day, playing and watching her discover things and just being in the water, in the sand, at the beach, taking her to the aquarium, going on walks.
And it was cool just like
really good
watching
family time.
Her warm up to the ocean, because she wasn't really about it at first. And then once she realized Hawaii ocean is just a big bath, she was all about it.
And she loves the fishies. We took her to the aquarium, and she is obsessed with the Baby Shark song like every toddler on the planet. And we get to the shark exhibit, and she's shark, 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 bye-bye shark.
Actually, guys.
Baby Shark?
Ember.
Do.
Listen, Ember will actually like hum the tune now.
Yeah. She knows. She can do like one chorus of it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Anyways, well, it was a great trip. We're glad to be home, though.
Yeah, glad to be home in some, getting back.
Starting
in
to
some
warm
rhythms.
Up here in Oregon.
It
hopefully.
Is.
Hopefully.
Yeah. This week we are going to be doing something a little different on the podcast. Well, really we have a specific topic that we want to cover this week on both episodes. And the episodes are going to be a little different, but we're really excited about it.
This is maybe one of our most requested topics to talk about too. A lot of you guys request learning more about this.
Yeah.
And so,
on book tour, we had the privilege to sit down and be interviewed by two Enneagram experts, and we were on both their podcasts, the Typology podcast with Ian Cron and the Enneagram Journey with Suzanne Stabile.
Okay, now if people are listening, they're like, what are you saying, Enneagram? What is that? Tell them for just a brief second.
The Enneagram is a personality.
If you don't know,
it's a personality typing system, and it's a self-discovery tool. That's probably the simplest.
We like to say self-discovery for self-growth. Shows you the box you're in and how to get out of it.
Yeah, so that's probably the simplest description of the Enneagram, but it's unlike other personality typing systems in the sense that it's super, super, super expansive. Mm-hmm. So there's like many
dynamic
layers to it, very dynamic. There's no, you can't use it as an excuse to like permit bad behavior because, oh, this is just the way I am. It's like, there's a lot of depth that goes into the Enneagram. You can be in healthy eight, an unhealthy eight, then there's.
And we learned so much more about it just in these interviews that we didn't know. And we thought we knew a lot because we had read two books about it before.
We haven't actually finished one of them.
And we actually had one Enneagram expert, Chris Hewitt, on our podcast. If you guys remember thinking back to, all the way back to when we first launched the podcast, I think it was one of the first five episodes. If you want to go back and listen to that, that's a really good just overview of what the Enneagram is. But today's episode, we're going to kind of go a little bit deeper into specifically Enneagram 8s and Enneagram 9s because Jeremy is a 9 and I'm an 8. And Ian had a masterful interview with us where he really got us to...
Well, we thought this would be really good.
Really vulnerable. And
we thought what way to like present the Enneagram in a healthy manner than have an expert interview us and then let you guys listen to it.
Exactly.
So this felt like a very good...
It's probably one of the more intimate podcasts or interviews that we did during the entire book tour. Both of these.
Both of these are probably...
Our one with Suzanne and our one with Ian. Like we, in the middle of it, it was like a little mini therapy session for Jer and I. So
our hope...
Insight into therapy with the roll-offs in Tuesday and Thursday's episodes this week.
Our hope for these, though, would be that in... learning about the Enneagram, hearing the differences between, it's more specifically for the 8s and 9s. However, you should be able to see just how useful of a tool this is, no matter your number. Like if you don't want to engage with this tool, this is probably the most helpful tool in our marriage, second to the marriage journal. And obviously mentors and community and stuff. But, this has just been an amazing tool for us. And we hope in listening to these interviews, you'll really get, your mind will be blown as to just how useful it can be. So there's that.
Yeah. So we're going to make this Enneagram week. We would love to know if the Enneagram has been helpful to you, what resources you've loved about it. Share with us over on Instagram at Behind the Scenes Podcast. Let us know your number. Let us know feedback about these episodes. I know there's just been a lot of people requesting about more of a deep dive on the Enneagram. And so we've shared some behind the scenes from these interviews, and we've shared on our Instagram stories these interviews or pieces of these interviews, and a lot of people have been super intrigued. So I think this is going to be an insightful week.
For sure.
If you're into Enneagram especially.
And if you're not, you're going
to
be.
And if you're not, if you listen to these, you're going to be.
So today's episode, we're going to be sharing our interview with Ian Cron from the Typology Podcast, which is a great, great podcast on the Enneagram. And Ian Cron is the author of the best-selling book, The Road Back to You. And
he co-authored that with Suzanne Stabile, who's on Thursday's episode of the podcast.
So Ian Cron, co-author of the best-selling book, The Road Back to You, An Enneagram Journey to Self-Discovery. And that is a fantastic intro to Enneagram.
Yes.
This is what it is.
Overview. It's the yellow book with the on the cover.
He is host of...
Path Between Us is the path on the cover. Never mind, sorry.
He is the host of the Typology Podcast and master teacher of the Enneagram. And he's also a trained psychotherapist. So Ian Cron is the guy when it comes to Enneagram. So I hope you guys enjoy...
Really insightful conversation with him.
Enjoy our interview with him. All right, let's dive into it.
Audrey and Jeremy, welcome to Typology.
Thanks for having us, Ian. Yeah. Pleasure.
Yeah, man. I love the idea that we're going to be talking about marriage.
Yes.
Yes. We do too.
Stuff.
And as we were talking earlier, you're just getting ready to do a book tour.
Yes, we are. We're actually leaving at the time we're recording this right now. We are leaving for the tour in 2 days. So,
So we're like all hands on deck. Sails are dropped, ready to catch wind here for sure.
Yeah.
Phew. So. I know that feeling. So tell me about the book.
Yeah. So do you want to?
Yeah. So the book by and large is the narrative of kind of our love story, at least up until the first couple years of being married, and just the process in which we went about it, what we struggled with, what we succeeded at. And we're kind of labeling it a prescriptive memoir in the sense that it is our story, but there's definitely some helpful tools, tips, and inspiration throughout it on how to be more creative, intentional, and faithful in your love story. So that's what we hope people get out of it. They put it down feeling ignited and inspired to do just that, pursue a creative love story, an intentional love story, and a faithful love story. So we had a lot of fun writing it. It was kind of fun writing your love story with your lover, you know?
Right.
It was a fun experience.
And Jeremy and I, obviously we've only been married for 5 years. And so really the book is just kind of like this short few chapters of our grander love story. But we felt like we're super passionate about the topic. We're super passionate about relationships and marriage. And
we thought, you know, there's not a lot out there for how to prepare for marriage. And that's what just we were finding when we were in that season of dating and engagement. There's not a lot, and especially from a Christian perspective on the topic. So we were really fortunate to have been really well poured into by just couples who have been there, done that, and we're in a season of life ahead of us. And so we kind of leaned on their knowledge for a lot of the stuff that we wrote about in the book, but also just our own stories and failures and shortcomings and all of it. So we hope it can be a tool for people wherever they're at in their love story, whether they are single or they've been married for a while. We think there's things in the book that could be helpful. So
that is fantastic. Well, did you guys know the Enneagram when you were dating or before you got married?
We did not learn it.
Like 2 years ago, I think, is when we first heard it.
Until we were married.
And it has, it's by and large totally revolutionized, I would say, the way we communicate.
We knew Myers-Briggs, even the way we knew love languages.
Even the way we launch and start new projects has shifted. Like, it's fundamentally and foundationally kind of shifted the way we approach most things. And so we're big fans.
Yeah.
So don't you wish that you'd had the Enneagram before you got married?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we actually talk about that in the book. We say, you know, we did know these things. We knew love languages. We knew Myers-Briggs. Yeah. We were into personality, self-development for self-growth tools, but we hadn't heard of the Enneagram yet, and it would have been such a lifeline.
Well, the Enneagram's also making its resurgence, I feel, you know, and poking its head back up out of history, so... Makes sense we hadn't heard of it, but
so what if you'd had it, let's say someone had used it as part of your premarital counseling. And by the way, that's something I tell people all the time. It's like, I've actually thought about doing like a weekend for people that are planning to get married, and it's like,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
like, if I'd only known. Like, my wife and I look at, like, we've been married a lot longer than you, but I'm serious. We look back and we go, dang it, if he'd only known.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That would be amazing. You should do that.
Totally. So if you'd only known that you were an 8, Audrey, and Jeremy, you're a 9, like, how would that have changed things if you'd known about 8s and 9s prior to getting married? Like, what would have changed? How would it have been different?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's learned experience and there's told experience. And so for us, 3 years into marriage, we were learning in a very real way, like, okay, we're approaching things not just from our backgrounds, not just from my family structure, her family structure, and all, because marriage is the collision of oneness, right? It's two different things trying to become one and acting that out every day. So our personalities were trying to do that, and we were experiencing, I would say, the tension there. And then we found the Enneagram, and we felt like I totally get it. Like, Audrey's reacting to stress right now. I'm reacting to stress, and the two ways we react are completely, you know, different. And if someone would have told us that beforehand, like, hey, listen, your personalities are going to collide in these ways, and, you know, this is a good way to, it would have been awesome. I think it would have, we would have just gone into those first 2 years, I think, a little bit more prepared, I feel,
And I think, you know, one of the things our premarital counselors always told us was, be students of yourself and be students of your spouse. And if you can do that, you know, so much of conflict within marriage comes from misunderstanding or not understanding.
Yeah.
And so we just, you know, we wanted to be students of ourselves and we want to be students of each other. And I think just any tools that you can get that help you do that, and Enneagram being just one of them. But I think the thing that I love most about the Enneagram is just how it's so layered and so dynamic and so different from any of the other ones. And that's just been, like, really helpful in not letting things that Jeremy and I do, like, you know, Jeremy and I, we have our own sets of strengths and weaknesses within our marriage, but those strengths and weaknesses, like those weaknesses, for example, we don't want the Enneagram to be an excuse for us to continue in those weaknesses.
Right.
But we also, you know, want to learn certain things. I think, you know, for me as an 8 and as a wife, there was a lot of times in the beginning of our marriage and dating relationship where I was like, why can't you just do this? Or why aren't you just as passionate? Like, wanting to make him be like me, as opposed to meeting him where he's at and his, and just accepting him for who he is and some of his character traits that just are that aren't necessarily bad or sinful
that
or
you
whatever.
Need to see
they're
as a
just
gift.
Different, right? And not that I'm letting him be an letting him just ride it out as an excuse, like I mentioned. You know, obviously we both want to change and grow, but
yeah,
I think it just would have been so helpful and is for us now. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I when I talk to couples who are eights and nines, and when I've done some counseling, one of the things that's so interesting is the power dynamic.
Hmm. Yeah.
With eights and nines. You're both in the anger triad, mm-hmm. but the way that you express anger could not be more different.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It is so different. Your communication styles could not be more different. And what often happens, I can remember one time being with a couple, and the stereotype is the dominant compliant. Right. You've got an eight that's dominant. You got a nine who's compliant. Right. And so people tend to think that's the dynamic. Right.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you ask a couple in counseling, I'll say, well, OK, tell me now, like, who has the power in this relationship? You know what I'm saying? Like, who has the power in here?
Yeah.
And then the eight will smile and look at the nine and say, he does. Or she does, depending on who the nine is. Like, the eight will tell you the nine has power in ways that people don't see.
Right. Yeah.
It's not as obvious. So what's the power dynamic in your relationship like?
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Jeremy, you're smiling and you're laughing the way that the guy I asked that question of once did.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's so funny because, wow, this could get a little crazy.
Oh, let it.
Because
oh, I'm begging you.
A little crazy, you know? We could have some heated fellowship here.
Yeah. Or some heated fellowship. Yeah. I dig that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about power dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's so funny because we both show power differently too. And so, depending on the person that we're interacting with, they might have complete opposite interpretations with who wears the power. Because I don't translate power as the loudest. Like, there's a quote I love. The volume of your voice does not determine the validity of your argument. Mm-hmm. And so some people will think like, oh, well, like Audrey's coming in. She's loud. She's got these ideas and stuff. Like, she's got the elements that the make up power in my brain. But for us, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just stalling right now, but because I don't want to say it. But I mean, I would say Audrey and I definitely have a leadership role.
Jeremy also is in an interesting nine because I think growing up in the public eye and being an oldest child and just the dynamic of his family too has made him such a leader. Like, he's a leader in his family, he's a leader among his friends. Like, and people have Jeremy's whole life and now, you know, on social media looked up to Jeremy. Like, he's kind of had that maybe more than your typical nine or average nine. I don't know.
Totally.
But
if I'm in a room and it gets loud, you know, I feel like I've got a leadership quality or a power. I don't want to call it power play, but there's a sense of like, I'm not going to compete with audacious movements and my voice. I'm just going to walk out of the room. And then before I know it, everyone would be in the next room, you know? And I feel like that's an interesting, it's just interesting how people interact with power. You know what I mean? Or how, and I think a lot of that's how it's shown too. But for Audrey and I would say we're a really, really good team. Mm-hmm. You know, like, Audrey's got her moments. I've definitely got my moments, but at the end of the day, you know, I practice the being the leader of our family and kind of making a lot of final decisions, and Audrey looks at me to do that, and that's how we've decided to move forward in our relationship, and how we do things. And it is a call for me to step up to the plate in many ways, because I will tend to be more passive in some areas. I will tend to go on a vacation and say, oh yeah, we should probably rent a car, you know? And yeah, sure. Let's go to the beach. Thing. Like,
we work together, and so we do this, like, we work together, and our friend and employee that works for us, Dan.
Yeah.
He will often say, like, oh, is Jer on free time? Is Jer free time over? Because like, we'll be working out. And like, Dan and I will be way more similar personalities, real fired up about something. And then we'll look to Jer and he's like, on his phone doing something.
Well, they tapped out my mana. And I'm like, I got to
repower
here.
Is Jer's free time over? Like, what happened? Where's Jer?
Yeah. So then, but then I come back and I'm coming back with my ideas and it's good. But yeah, we have fun for sure. But I see, like how delicate I was with that, babe. I really danced through that, I feel.
But. Yeah, well, you know, I was actually about to comment on the fact that the communication style of nines is called Epic Saga.
Oh, really?
Because they get started and they riff and they just start talking and it goes on and on and you go, when's he gonna answer the question?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, they're really good at dodging the bullet.
I have not heard of that.
You've not heard that?
How frustrating do you think that is?
Right. Well, the age communication style sometimes is called... authoritative, you know, they're very, it's commanding. Oh,
yeah, right? It's commanding, aggressive, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my mom is an eight. Mm. My daughter is an eight. Oh. Both of them have red hair.
Oh, whoa. Funny.
Right?
Yeah.
For those,
yeah.
Obviously, people can't see you, Audrey, but yes. You know.
Yeah.
You have darker red hair than my two have more carrot, orangey, yeah.
Yes.
Crazy, you know, like wild, you know, orange. Yeah, yeah. But here's the thing. When they talk, I like to say that their talk style is more like barking. You know what I mean? Because they can get this barking command thing. You're like, do this, do that. You know, it's like, you know, they just come in pointing at things and telling. They're the only people I know who will try and tell an inanimate object what to do.
Yes, you know? Yes.
They're going to say, tell the oven or the refrigerator to do something. And actually, they do. I mean, you know, the eggs have that quality.
It takes, so what are you, what are you, Ian? What's your Ben?
I'm a four.
You're four, okay.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because Audrey's and my our communication style. Like Audrey will come in and I will. It's funny. It almost works really, really well because I'll let her bark, do her thing. You know, like yell at. It's this gotta do. You gotta do this. Blah, blah.
I don't.
And
yell
I'm engaging. I've learned how to do it.
I get fired about topics, but like yell.
But like when I'm in the garage when I'm in the garage working because I have a chair in the garage and you come in and next thing you know there's a laundry list in front of me and. I'm gracious. I'm like, yes, okay, awesome. But I don't let it get to me because it very easily could.
Yeah.
You know? And then, but then I come in and I've done two things because I've got my own list, but I've learned not to compete with the energy because I have a specific amount of mana and I will run out if I try to compete with it.
But then I need him to compete with it sometimes because I feel like
which is something I've
he's
learned
not listening
as well.
Or he is not like I need to have a reciprocal, like the perfect example is when we're driving and Jeremy is like a daredevil and nothing, he's invincible in any driving situation, right? So he's like, yes. And so if we get, you know, close to, and we also have old cars, like all Jeremy, we have three cars from the 1970s. So Jeremy and I break down a lot. And so we get in these situations where it's, you know, a little bit stressful and everything's fine for Jeremy. Just
cool
like
cucumber.
Hammock on a beautiful day, right? We're on the side of the road, stranded in the snow, waving jumper cables. And Jeremy's just calm, cool, and collective. And like, I need Jeremy
Can't
sometimes
disturb my peace.
To, I need Jeremy to meet me where I'm at. Like, I need him to go, yeah, babe, this sucks. This is not good. Like, you know, this is stressful. We're about to leave for a book tour in 2 days. Yeah, we got a lot to do. Like, you know, sometimes I just need him to like make me feel like I'm not a crazy
telling her
person.
To calm down and enjoy the moment only worked for about a month.
Yeah, right. So
okay,
you know.
So y'all want to go there?
Yeah, let's go there.
All right, so this is very funny because I was watching you at the beginning of the conversation. I asked Jeremy a question. Jeremy started to answer the question, and then it kind of went to Epic Saga. We started to kind of roll off into the ether a little bit. He was sort of, I think, I'm not sure he remembered the question about halfway into the answer, and then he kept going like a good nine. And then, Audrey, you jumped in and answered the question.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So if I were a marriage therapist, which I am, I would be like, did we just see the dynamic there? Like, you guys, now that can be a great partnership or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
That can be a good thing or not such a good thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's both for us sometimes, you know, like I think it is.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. What do you think? Spew us some of your marriage therapy. Come on.
All right.
Hey,
Hey friends, we hope you are enjoying this conversation with Ian. We love the Enneagram. It's been such a helpful tool for our marriage, but we wanted to take a quick minute to tell you guys about one of the most helpful tools for our marriage, and that is our marriage journal. We have been just so blessed by the marriage journal, and it's been such a great tool for connecting, communicating, and ultimately helping us grow in love. It's our quote unquote good time to talk about it each week. And it's a weekly journal that just helps you and your spouse get on the same page and understand each other better so that you can love each other more. We created a special discount code for our podcast followers, and that is podcast10 at checkout. You can go to themarriagejournal.com to grab yourself a copy and start this week.
Well, I'd say it can be a good thing if the 8 is sensitive and the 9 is receptive. That, you know, the 8 can kind of step in and bring the 9 into focus, you know, help the 9 get a little more focused.
Yeah, yeah.
But the 8 has to be careful that they don't rob the 9 of what they have to say, of who they are. Because a 9 is oftentimes, I mean, very willing sometimes to fade into the background, and the 8 is determined not to.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the 8 has to be careful that they don't reflexively jump in and take control and assert power over the other and the environment too fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, take a deep breath, let Jeremy answer the question or not answer the question. Mm-hmm. Up to Jeremy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Right? Yeah.
So, I mean, it can be like anything else in life, right? I always believe that with the Enneagram, any two numbers are great together to the degree that they're self-aware and healthy. Okay. So with you guys, again, you know, it's a matter of negotiating our differences. Appreciating and negotiating differences, I think, is so important. Now, Helen Palmer has a great sort of thing about 8s and 9s. She says, she asked the question, what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object?
Yeah, I've heard this. Yeah.
Can you answer the question? What happens when an irresistible force, the 8, meets an immovable object, the 9?
Dangerous velocity.
Frustration. Frustration.
Yeah. Frustration happens.
Yeah. Inertia of some kind. I don't know which direction it's going, but wow. I don't know. Lay it on us.
Well, I mean, no, I'm asking you the question. I think this gets back a little bit to the power dynamic, right?
Yeah, because I feel like it becomes who can beat the door harder or who can hold their ground longer.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah,
it has to do, I think, too, about the two different ways that you guys express anger. Again, people don't tend to, I mean, they don't see it. I'm married to a 9, so I know a lot about 9s.
Yeah.
Okay. What they don't see is how... Okay, so an 8 is a driver, right? You're just powering forward, right? Mm-hmm. And you love that energy. You love that forward momentum kinds of energy and, you know, making things happen, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I think what'll happen, though, is if Jeremy isn't into what's going on, right, then stubbornness breaks out. He becomes immovable, right?
Yeah.
You won't see it, but that's the anger, right? Mm-hmm. Your anger... Audrey comes out externally,
right?
At a million miles an hour, you see it; it's obvious. Whereas for Jeremy, it's not obvious.
But
the anger is there; it's just coming out sideways in sort of a passive aggressive fashion, right?
I would
so
say
stubbornness.
That's true.
Yeah,
that is more true. Mostly
would you
true
say I'm passive aggressive though, babe?
I don't know. Yeah, way more so.
This is the most loaded conversation. This is like, babe, would you say I'm passive aggressive? You know, by the end of this thing, I can't wait to see where we are in 30 minutes from now, man. This is getting tense.
No, I think just
let me ask you on a podcast in front of people.
Yeah,
let's
right?
see.
Exactly. That's how our life is. So yeah. I think you're not. I mean, I think you're way more. If you had to choose between aggressive and passive aggressive, like more which way you lean in conflict,
more passive,
definitely
for sure.
towards.
Definitely, yeah. That's but. Interesting. I would say, yeah, it's, and this is where, again, I'm going back to like how useful This has been so foundational on how I receive Audrey's energy and react to it, and how Audrey receives my protection of my peace, of my energy. Nothing is going to get me, you know. Right now, I've got a knot in my shoulder from all the work we've been doing coming up, and I'm getting ready to go for a long walk, where Audrey's getting ready to write 3 more blog posts or something. I don't know, but so we respond very differently. But yeah, it's I guess it, at the end of the day, it's funny because isn't, correct me if I'm wrong, you would know, but like the Enneagram is especially concerning couples. At the end of the day, the power dynamic is kind of the core. Is that a human thing?
Yes. There's power dynamics in every relationship.
Yeah.
Mm. In but every single relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like there's healthy ways that plays out in unhealthy ways. And I wonder, I mean, there's got to be a way we're all wired to risk to, in which way they should work out, right? Or is it kind of an endless?
People just should be aware of power dynamics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not just in couples who are married. It's friends. It's coworkers. Right. It's everybody. There's always a power dynamic moving. And it shifts. You know, and it, but because there's never an equal moment. There's very few equal moments when it comes to power, you know?
Yeah. Is there anything you would tell an 8 and 9, the fire and water, fire and ice duo, as far as the that power struggle, that power dynamic? Anything you would lay on us?
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess what I would say is, I think it's really important for couples in general to honor and respect and not try to change the other into what they want them to be in order to feel better in the world themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? But to let the other be completely, and actually help the other become completely who they are.
Right. That's good.
Yeah.
Right? And that requires a lot of dying to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And that's where I think like the faith component of just this Enneagram in general has kept us not going over the deep end of making it into an excuse, but like you said, the dying to yourself, like, you know, the whole point of it is to get us to figure out things about ourselves, that what are the things that need to change and what are the things that we continue to press into, you know, and letting that refining process happen through marriage.
Backed up against who we were kind of created to be and the people we were are supposed to become, and on the never-ending journey to be more like Christ. For us specifically, like, this has just been a no-brainer functional tool in doing so, for sure.
Right.
Audrey, here's maybe a way of getting at that. What is it you wish Jeremy knew about himself and believed about himself, but doesn't?
But doesn't?
Right. What do you wish he knew and believed about himself that he doesn't?
Oh, that could get real deep, but...
Well, you said let's go there.
I mean,
babe, keep it a garden spade deep, please.
What do I wish he knew? A garden spade?
Yeah, don't be taking no foot on top of some flathead shovel for this one.
I think, I mean, like, I don't know. This is just the first thing that came to my mind, okay? Good. And this could be a very broad answer for anybody, not even an 8-9 dynamic, but I think just Jeremy needs to know that he measures up, that like what he's doing in all aspects, like I feel like he sort of believes it, but like needs to believe it more, that like who he is and what he's doing measures up. That's what I would say.
So Jeremy, as Audrey was saying that, you did a very 9 thing. You were looking off into the distance, almost, you were looking down toward the ground, almost like you were moving into like what I call it the 9s, like it's an ether dissociative kind of state. You kind of like sort of checked down, you were looking down at the ground. Well, I'm just curious, where did that land for you when she said that?
No, I was actually thinking, Audrey's done a... And again, this might be thanks to the Enneagram, but she's done a good job at, I think, identifying that, because there's been a couple times that she has told that to me, you know, over our pillow talk, if you will, telling me at night, like, hey, I just want you to know you're a good husband, you're a good leader, and you measure up. And that's been very helpful for me in as I step into roles that might not come extremely natural to me, but I know I'm capable of and very good at because I have been when I'm healthy in the past, it's been helpful. But I think the reason for my brief, subtle disassociation with the conversation is because it got emotional for a quick, brief second, and then I waited for the butterfly to go away and re-engaged.
But that's exactly what I wanted to sort of pin in on, because I think this is important for Nines for listening. It moved you, didn't it, when she said that?
Yeah, for sure.
And what? Why did it move you?
Oh, well, probably because it was meaningful, first off, and it came from a heart of sincerity from Audrey. And sometimes I feel disassociate myself with that, because sometimes I come up against things I can't necessarily control that very easily, and then it I want to say disturbing. It disturbs me a little bit, right? That unrest feeling. Some people, like Audrey, thinks it's one of her favorite things is when we get into that, you know, emotional spot where her heart is stirring and it's like good. And like, although I can be romantic and I do, I don't necessarily vibe on that. And I don't think, maybe this is a Nine thing more than it's a male thing. I don't know. But did I just go off on a rant again? Tell me. Ian.
No, you didn't. This is important though. I think it's important because I think the message that Nines hear growing up is your presence doesn't matter. That you're, that it's better just not to assert myself. It's better for me to just go with the flow. Don't rock the boat. And you know, what's the point? Everyone else seems to have stronger opinions than I do. So why even bother, you know, putting it out there? I'll just go with what they want to do. And so for a Nine to hear, you know, man, like you're worth asserting yourself. You have what it takes to meet life. Go for it. You know, like as Mary Oliver says, you know, rise up and take hold of your one wild and precious life.
Yeah. I feel like there's a fear associated with that, definitely.
What is it?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the question?
I think for Jared.
Whoa, look at that. She just started to answer the question for you.
I was quiet for a long time. Gosh,
3 seconds, I think. Yeah.
You guys are being hard on me. No.
You can take it, though. Trust me.
Yeah, seriously.
Hey. No, but okay, I'll let you then.
Well, no, I mean, there's when you're called to a higher standard, you know, that, I mean, I think there's always a fear involved with it. And some of it might be because you think you can actually do it. And then what? And then the other side of it is, well, what if it doesn't work? And I think, isn't that one of the roots of fear, you know, is that what if? Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I believe that, and I feel like I'm definitely, as Audrey mentioned, a unique Nine in the sense that my entire life I've been assertive. I've been, you know, kind of a leader in my friend group and my family, and my parents being disabled, I was always the one doing everything, going up at 8, talking to the airport person, blah, blah, blah.
I think that's
so, like, I've been trained to be a leader, but I think at the same time, it goes against, in many ways, my core protection of my peace. And sometimes I think it's, you know, sometimes I personally say, you know what? It's not worth it, maybe. And then I sit back, and then that's when Audrey comes at me with either A, affirmation, or B, aggressiveness, if you will, you know, of like, hey, get up, get out and go, because you're capable. And you're not, and I need you to be, and I need a contender, you know.
Yes.
And
when I don't, this is awesome.
Yeah. When I don't contend with her, then I'm kind of losing. She's losing out on part of the relationship that she needs, and so. But for me, there's definitely a fear involved with that. I think, because if I did step up and became the healthiest Nine ever, it's like, whoa, that could be really, really cool. But what if, you know, something doesn't work?
Yeah. So this is fantastic. Okay. Because what you just described is health.
Yes.
You just described health. It's when I asked you that question, and then Audrey, when you spoke, what you were doing was you were speaking into a wound in him. And every type carries a wound, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of us do. And it's so important that we understand. I think that love always begins with understanding.
Mm.
It,
yeah.
It begins with me really making the effort and paying attention to my other, you know, to my wife, Anne, that I can understand her, but also understand particularly her suffering. Where is it she suffers? Mm. So I can speak into it in a way that brings healing and that she has an awareness that I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
And I think that's what gets moving. You know, it's like, oh, you just spoke into the secret place in me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is afraid that I don't have what it takes to lead, to assert myself, to live my one wild and precious life, you know, like I'm afraid. So, all right. So Jeremy, what is it about Audrey that you wish she knew and believed about herself, but she doesn't?
Yeah. I mean, I hope this isn't too classic, but I feel like I would tell Audrey, you are not proven by what you do, and it's okay to relax.
And what?
And it's okay to relax.
It's okay.
No, I honestly though, I'm dead serious. Like, I think that Audrey in many ways thinks that her output is her most valuable, you know, asset, and that if she's not achieving or doing, I mean, this is so classic eight, I feel, but also just knowing the way Audrey grew up and super, super high functioning, competitive athletes, musicians, and high achieving family, you know, there's this bloodline and this spirit of, mm-hmm. of accomplishment. And sometimes Audrey, I think in her, when she's not, at her best, you know, believes that like, if you didn't achieve something today worth writing about, you know, then it wasn't a good day.
Mm-hmm.
And that manifests itself in some heated fellowship ways.
Yes.
So Audrey, what did you feel like when Jeremy said that?
I think it's true. I mean, I just think it's
true.
But
how did you feel?
How did I feel? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I do need to be told that on a regular basis. I feel, how do I feel?
So,
I don't know.
So here's a question.
I feel like it's
for you, maybe, babe, or Ian, but like,
I thought you were talking to me, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You can call me baby babe. We've known each other for 20 minutes.
Yeah. So sometimes I feel like Audrey wants me to comp. If she doesn't do something, she wants me to compensate for it because something has to get done. And if it's not her, it has to be me then. And then we have this discussion there, because at the end of the day, it has to be bar. There has to be a bar that has to be met, and she doesn't care who does it. But then she speaks into me assertions that might not vibe with the way I think the day should roll out. Mm-hmm. So my question is kind of like, well, does something need to get done at all, you know? Or is it a matter of, yeah, Jer, like I do need to step up and at least take one step towards our goals.
Mm-hmm.
So is that one step a day necessary? Doesn't matter who does it? Or is it actually okay that nothing gets done one day?
Hmm.
Is that an interesting thought?
Yeah.
I don't know. Did that make sense, Ian?
Yeah, no, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. I think...
If Audrey and I were to assess that for Audrey and her wound, assessing that idea might be helpful for us. You know, I don't know. Because it obviously implies one of two outcomes. It either implies like, yeah, I need to step up a little bit more, or you need to step down a little bit more on the ambition side of things, because that's your strength is ambition. So does mine need to rise or yours need to low?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
man, and I think that's a moment to moment call.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think it's ever going to be
definitely.
Right. So it's like watching gauges.
True.
Like, you know, in like in chemistry, they call it titrating. You know, you have two chemicals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're all going into the same beaker, and you've got two controls. You know, you need to get a little bit more of this one, a little bit more of that one. And so I think that so much of marriage is just paying attention.
Yeah.
It's staying awake and paying attention. Do we need a little bit more of that? Do we need a little more of this? Is it time to back up? Is it time to go forward? And you're not always going to get it right.
And the ingredients are always changing.
sometimes. But the two of you can be such a gift to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. And you know, you were just talking about like two, you know, an immovable, like a mountain. You can be the mountain. You know, Audrey, you tend to be the storm, right? Mm-hmm. A mountain is solid. It's there, right? The storm mm-hmm. needs the mountain in a way. You know what I mean? Like you need mm-hmm. something that's immovable because you're on the move all the time. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy, you need the power of the storm in your life, you know?
Otherwise I'll just sit there stoic.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know? So again, you're always kind of constantly, you know, mixing the colors, and it's always titrating. It's always mixing what's the right balance between these two energies.
Yeah,
that we
good.
Bring to this relationship, you know, but that requires years of learning each other, mm-hmm. and it can get sparky. You know what I mean? Like as you learn it, because those chemicals could be combustible.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
I mean,
they can get pretty combustible. So
for sure.
Jeremy, you know, one of the struggles that nines have in relationships, like nines often seek out relationships with powerful personalities.
Yeah.
And the reason is that it's easy for the nine who's not aware. Okay, so I'm talking about kind of an unhealthy, average, not very awake nine. So I'm not talking about you. I'm just talking about nines. Okay.
Yep,
yep. Just to make that clear. Because they can ride on the energy of the other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This like they can go like, wow, I'm outsourcing the power right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like this person has all the energy. Let him do it. I'm just going to expend as few calories as I can riding behind this person. It's like drafting behind a racer.
Yeah. Yeah.
On bikes. Right.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Oh dear.
Now here's the thing. It's interesting. Back at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned this notion of becoming one, right?
Yeah.
So the danger for the nine can be that they confuse becoming one with fusing with somebody else.
It's a good thought, yeah.
So I think, you know, just going back to the dynamic of your relationship, I mean, part of the journey for you two will always be, or the thing you have to guard against, Jeremy, I think is, how do I become fully myself? In psychology, we call it individuated, differentiated. How do I become my own person separate from Audrey?
Yeah.
Pursuing my own ambitions, my own dreams, asserting myself, offering my opinions, my viewpoints, my perspectives. How do I do that with strength and to be separate? So not merging, which is what nines tend to do. They tend to get blurry and to merge into the big energy of the other, right? Mm-hmm. And Audrey, for you, so much of it is like, how do I make space mm-hmm. for Jeremy to become that person?
Yes.
Because you occupy a lot of space as an eight. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're just a larger than life presence. So it gets, you know, it fills a room. Like literally, you can fill a room with your energy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do I make space for Jeremy to mm-hmm. become that person? And like, because I think becoming one is a good goal. I think communion is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Okay? Like communion is a goal in a relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think people often, and nines will do this, and eights will go along with it. They confuse fusion with communion. So how do I put this? Like imagine two candles. You're holding two candles and they're sharing the same flame. You can't tell which one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
there's one flame, but you can see that they're two candles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that's a great, I think, visual metaphor for a good relationship. The danger with an 8-9 combination or 9, you know, will do is that they'll fuse to try and make it one candle and they'll just say, mm-hmm. let the 8 be the candle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of becoming their own person.
Yeah, that's really good. And I feel like we have definitely come up against that. To be fair, we've had as we pursue our work ventures specifically, you know, we have come up against conversations that have recognized the fusing of us. And a big tension point is that we need some of that separation because we work together and we own a company with multiple, you know, business fronts and and we do a lot of things and none of it could work without one of us. Right. Mm-hmm. But we definitely are coming up on those conversations because I've got my own dreams. But if we're not careful, they won't happen because there's a larger sphere in the room that's pulling, you know, to a lot of gravity being, you know, Audrey and her energy. And so we're trying to figure out how to carve space to pursue some other things. And maybe it's just asserting the idea or maybe it's just deciding what that is and pursuing it or maybe we don't know. We're having those conversations, but we're so tracking with you as you explained that because, yes, we're in that and we know exactly what that feels like.
I think it's like in a band when the two artists decide to make their own records. They make their own records, right? They go off and they do solo projects. And I think sometimes in a marriage, and I encourage my wife on this, and she's doing so much work right now. It's so great. You know, I've been in recovery for a long time and she goes to Al-Anon. She's really sort of gotten into it lately. And it's really like bringing her a lot of strength, you know, to realize you're you and I'm me.
Yeah.
You know, like we are two separate things. And because I have a big personality and when we got married, trust me, her part of her desire, I think, unconscious desire in marrying a big personality was, this is great. I can just ride on the back end of all this energy.
Mm-hmm.
And save calories. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like just save calories and emotional, psychological, and spiritual calories. And it worked for a while, but here's the problem. And I'm just talking to you from a 31-year marriage, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
You get down the road and an 8 or a 4 like me starts to feel like, you know, I'm getting a little bored. Like because your energy isn't meeting mine, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you can get some tension. You can get some friction in the marriage. Mm-hmm. And I think what's so great is, you know, I think it's important for an 8 to say the 9 and the 9 to say to the 8, why don't you go make a solo record? Go be your own person separate from this relationship.
Totally. Yep.
I think that is something that actually we have been more intentional about lately. Just even since having our daughter, just in the past like year and a half, you know, we do so much together, but I think because we do so much together, that's part of the reason why we have had to give ourselves that, you know, we have had to kind of tell each other that. And Jeremy right now is doing this massive building a table. What is it called? A resin table?
The resin table build.
He's doing this. I mean, he's building
just,
this.
That's a hobby, but yeah.
I know it's a hobby, but it's still just like this. I don't understand that at all. Like totally separate thing that he is doing that I have no part of the success of it at all and have no skill sets to offer whatsoever. But in the same sense, like I'm interested in it and I want him to tell me about it. And we have this chapter in our book called The Principle of Sharing. And it comes from this concept in one of our favorite books about like, if your spouse loves something, or if the person that you love loves something, there must be something to love about it. And so it doesn't mean you have to like go adopt all the same hobbies and do all the same things. But like you said, Ian, before, like understanding what that person loves about it, in order to understand them better, you have to at least try it. And like for Jer and I, there was just lots of different things that like we've sort of done that give and take. And like Jeremy hated running, but he ran a half marathon for me. And I hated soccer, but I watched the World Cup with him. Just to be able to understand, like I learned so much about Jeremy just by learning about how much he loves the World Cup, you know, and he learned so much about me by running that half marathon and training for it. And so like there needs to be these separate ventures, but there also needs to be a willingness to like not just check out on them. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So
I think, I mean, it's a good place for us to start winding up because I think one of the things I've enjoyed about this conversation is I think y'all are pretty healthy. I mean, that's just, you know, it's not like I, but it's not like I'm like the love god, you know, who yeah, can like, yeah. you know, do an assessment in 58 minutes of your, but,
right.
you know, like I pressed you on some stuff and mm-hmm. it was kind of really beautiful to watch. I mean, I feel like you're embodying, yeah, I mean, you put it this way, you're a whole heck of a lot more self-aware than I was at 5 years into marriage, you know, more awake. You know what I mean? Like more attuned to what is mm-hmm. happening here, to this yeah. moment. What is happening in this person, in this relationship at this moment? We just weren't even thinking in those categories.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's beautiful to just be witness to things and you know, push a little bit and see what comes yeah. of it, you know, because it's yep. rich. It's really rich. Yeah. And I think... you know, I'm eager to read your book and to find more. I love the title.
Thanks.
Love Letter Life. A Love Letter Life. Pursue creatively, date intentionally, love faithfully. It comes out April 2nd. Oh my Lord.
Yeah. We're on top of it. Zondervan.
Oh my gosh. Well, I know. You know, get ready. Put your everybody put your pants on. It's gonna get busy out there.
Yep. Yeah.
And of course, you know, people can check out your blog, Beating 50%. Beating 50%.
Yeah, yeah. Or even more so, if you just want to see everything we're up to, you can just go to theroloffs.com.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we got quite a few.
It kind of takes you to all the different.
Quite
all
a few
the
irons in the fire, yeah.
Nice.
That's kind of the one-stop shop.
Right, so go to the Roloffs, ROLOFFS.com.
Yeah.
Check out their podcast, Behind the Scenes.
Yep.
And what else, man? What else do I need to tell people about you? They get plugged into all the goodness you're doing.
Man.
Just our names on social media.
Yep.
Having which
a lot
are?
Of fun trying to be intentional. Yeah, which is Audrey Roloff and Jeremy Roloff. We're big on Great. Instagram if you want to really kind of follow us and...
Great.
And get plugged in. That's kind of where we like to hang out. So
fantastic. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, hey,
thanks.
Ian,
this was awesome, Ian.
This was a pleasure.
We're gonna be recapping our conversation afterwards, you know. Or maybe I will be. We'll see.
I'm about to head to the garage and have a 1201 drink, yeah.
Go eat yourself a moon pie in the garage throw back a Schlitz. Okay. That'll be good. So no, seriously, this was a real gift for me and I appreciate
us too.
It. Yeah. And listen, Typology listeners, be sure to check out the Roloffs, be sure to check out their book, A Love Letter Life, Pursue Creatively, Date Intentionally, Love Faithfully. It drops April 2nd. And remember the words of the great author, Oscar Wilde, be yourself. Everybody else is already taken. See ya.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Ian as much as we did. I feel like we learned a lot about the Enneagram.
A lot about each other and a lot about ourselves.
Yeah, totally. So if you guys want to learn more about the Enneagram, you can subscribe to Ian's podcast, Typology, or pick up The Road Back to You, which he co-authored with the person we're having on next week, babe.
Nope, this Thursday, Suzanne Stabile.
This Thursday, Suzanne Stabile.
And our conversation with Suzanne is also just incredibly insightful. We talk specifically a lot about, as humans, our orientation to time, whether we're oriented to the past, present, or future. It's super interesting conversation with her.
Yeah.
Don't miss Thursday's episode. It's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a really good one. So announcements, babe. Do we have any announcements?
Yes, one big, really exciting announcement that we just found out, and we haven't told anyone this yet, but... We just found out that our book is going to be in Hobby Lobby. Hobby Lobbies across the country. So
yes.
If you're a Hobby Lobby lover or Hobby Lobby shopper, we don't know exactly when it's going to hit all the stores. So go keep an eye out for it. And if you see it
in the wild,
snap a picture and tag us so you can see, because we love seeing our book hit stores in new places, and just it's super exciting. So
so that's big news.
We're really grateful for that opportunity, and that was a big, exciting
thing. That was a big announcement. That was pretty exciting.
other things coming up.
Yeah.
If you are going on a road trip this weekend, it's Memorial Weekend this weekend. So if you have plans to take a trip somewhere and you need some something to listen to in the car ride, you can download the Audible version of our book, A Love Letter Life. It is actually Jeremy and I's voices recording the book. So it's us reading our love story, and we think it's fun. Right, babe?
Yes, we think it's fun.
We think it's a fun way to read the book just because you can hear our tone of voice and just the emotion in the words that we're reading.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the story that we lived. And so if you need a good listen, if you and your hubby are packing up to go on a road trip somewhere, it's like how many hours, babe? 4-5 hours, I think?
It's a six-hour read.
6 hours. Okay, 6-hour Audible listen. So if you're going on a road trip, plane trip, whatever, this weekend, that's just a little idea for you.
Yeah.
And
then other than that, you had something to mention on
one other fun thing that is cool that's going on. If you guys are interested in health and wellness at all, I have a Instagram account specifically for that. It's called More Than Oils. And there's a really crazy awesome deal sale going on right now. So if you want more information about it, you can go to More Than Oils and find out about it. I won't talk your ear off about it over here, but just wanted to make that announcement for those of you who are interested.
Yeah. All right.
Hope you guys have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Babe, I don't have anything.
Babe, any other announcements?
No, that's good. All right, you guys. Well, next week, as mentioned, we have an amazing podcast.
Thursday. You always say next week.
I keep saying next week.
We're still two episodes a week. For a few more weeks.
This Thursday, we got another amazing conversation with Suzanne Stabile. So stick around. You're not going to want to miss it. We'll see you guys then.